In towns around the U.S., fear about the environmental impact from fracking to extract oil has turned neighbor against neighbor. While some residents worry about water pollution, increased health risks, and other harmful effects, others welcome the economic boost that comes along with the money and jobs from the industry. But now some smaller energy firms think they have a solution to some of the environmental concerns, installing new technology called electric fracking, which uses a cleaner fuel source, natural gas.
President Trump says a ban on most flavored vaping products is the right response to what health officials call an epidemic of e-cigarette use by teenagers. A recent surge in illnesses possibly linked to vaping has grabbed the attention of lawmakers, regulators, and parents too, including the president and first lady.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's September 13th. And it is the bright and early hours of the morning, if you can't tell, 5:10 in the morning. We thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day, the last before the weekend. We made it through Friday, and there's lots going on this morning. We're going to get to some of it this morning on the program, the latest on the trade war, the latest on the markets as well on the program today. Our regulars are here, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We're going to go over our portfolios with Paul. Talk about some of the economic data out this week. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. Brian's the senior aviation business editor at Skift. We'll talk to Brian about what the latest is on 737 MAX. And there's some news about United Airlines, a frequent flyer program, their rewards program, that we'll talk to Brian about at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks ended yesterday higher on Wall Street amid some trade news between the U.S. and China, as well as the European Central Bank decision to cut a key interest rate. At the closing bell, the Dow was up 45 points yesterday. The NASDAQ gained 25. The S&P finished 9 points higher this morning. We're seeing positive numbers as well headed to the opening bell. Dow futures are up nearly 100 points, nearly a third this morning. NASDAQ futures are up nearly a third. S&P futures are up about a quarter of a percent. As we look around the rest of the world, markets this morning in Asia seem to be in the green. In Tokyo, up by nearly a percent, 228 points. In Hong Kong, up by nearly a percent. It's a holiday in China for the markets. In London, Europe is lower, but everything else is higher. Germany and France up nearly a half a percent. And oil is trading at $54.95 a barrel in the U.S., down about 14 cents. We have a couple of stories as we begin this morning. First, obviously, the trade war with China. Yesterday, some give on this issue with China exempting some items. President Trump, putting off some tariffs that were scheduled to hit in October. And last night, the Democratic presidential hopefuls hitting President Trump on the trade war with China during the latest presidential debate in Houston. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg said Trump clearly has no strategy on China. And businessman Andrew Yang argued that Trump's tariffs on China are pummeling the U.S. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar says that Trump is treating U.S. farmers and workers like poker chips in one of his failed casinos. Google is agreeing to pay $1.1 billion to France to settle a fiscal fraud probe. French officials claim the company failed to pay its dues for activities in their nation. Google reports almost all of its European sales in Ireland, where there is no tax. That's illegal as long as staff in Dublin conclude all sales. French officials originally wanted nearly $2 billion from Google. A new research shows that Americans are shelling out significantly more for new cars. According to a new study conducted by the AAA, finances on new cars purchased increased 24% in 2019. The average annual cost of owning a vehicle rounded out to just over $9,000, or about $773 a month. Research also found every 12 months added to the life of a car loan adds almost $1,000 in total finance charges in the long term. Let's begin front and center this morning. Paul Nolte is here. Paul is the Senior Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
Let's begin with trade. As I mentioned, there's a little bit of movement here. It feels like something's happening, but we've been here before, haven't we?
Oh, we've been here many times before, only to have, as I put it this last week, it's kind of like the Charlie Brown and kicking the football from Lucy, and we get that close to it, and all of a sudden something disappears. It sounds as though there's going to be a token deal, certainly not as all-encompassing as we had hoped. It doesn't address any of the technology issues and things like that. It's a little bit more bent toward the agricultural side. Again, it's a partial deal. It's a good thing from the perspective that people are moving a little bit more toward the center. But it's certainly not the all-encompassing deal that we'd be looking for at this point. But it's enough, certainly, to juice the markets.
Yeah, we'll get some more idea of this as this first round of talks, I guess, in October. If that goes well, we'll know pretty quickly about where things are headed, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and so far, I have not heard, to be honest, whether there's a specific date yet.
There is not. It just says early October.
Again, there's a lot of moving parts here. And again, when we're trying to invest and look at politics as kind of our guiding light, I think that's really where we're making the mistake in allowing politics and all this stuff around trade to really drive our investment decisions. We try to stay to the economic side of things where things are a little bit more certain.
One of those certainties appears to be, at least if you look at the latest polling of financial folks, Reuters out with it last night that we'll see a rate cut from the Fed this month and then maybe and likely one more before the end of the year.
And that's a little bit less than what we anticipated a month ago. We thought we would get 50 at this meeting and then another 50 between September and the end of the year, so a full percentage point. Now we're talking 50 basis points. The CPI numbers that came out yesterday were a little bit hotter than expected. And that may force the Fed to sit on the sidelines. They'd like to see the economy run a little hot to get that inflation number where they would like it to be. So as a result of that, they may not be as aggressive in cutting rates. The flip side of that is how does the equity market react to that? You know, we've been very comfortable and very happy with a very low interest rate environment. If the Fed decides to sit on their hands for a little while, the equity markets may not like that too terribly much.
Yeah, President Trump wants zero interest rates.
Well, yeah, and certainly everyone around the world would love zero interest rates, and we've got still $17 trillion that's below zero and going further below zero as we saw the ECB meet yesterday and talk about cutting rates further into negative territory. I'm not yet convinced that negative interest rates are a great thing for the overall economy, certainly terrible for savers. But again, we're going to this well for the second time and in hopes that low or negative interest rates will spur economic growth. And over the last 10 years, we really haven't seen that come to fruition.
We remind people, too, why I think the president is really pushing hard for zero interest rates. He owes a lot of money.
And well, it's not just he. It's the U.S. government owns a lot of money. And a lot of our money is short term. There was some discussion about pushing out and introducing 50 or 100-year bonds. And interest rates at current levels, I'd be a huge advocate for pushing out those maturities out to 50 to 100 years. The problem is you're going to have to pay up for it 2.25% versus 10, 15, 50 basis points at the short end. Mm-hmm. So you say, well, I'm going to have to pay four times as much interest payment by introducing a 50-year bond versus today. Part of the reason why most of our debt maturity, the government's debt, is relatively short term.
Yeah, and when we're talking about the government yesterday, we hit $1 trillion. The deficit is $1 trillion now. Mm-hmm. I remember when deficits were bad.
I remember when politicians actually cared about the deficit.
Maybe that's what I meant.
Yeah. And the last time we saw deficit was in the Clinton administration, and we've gone pretty much straight down ever since. And again, a lot of it is funding various programs. A lot of it is, lack of revenue versus money going out.
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts, you know, not necessarily paying for themselves. You know, and a lot of the infrastructure that we have set up now for a lot of the safety net programs as well, that's a huge part of the overall government. And that doesn't go away and only continues to build as the baby boomers make their way toward retirement.
And it's not sustainable, I don't think, is it, either? Maybe for a little bit, but not for a long term?
It's not for the long... I don't think it is for the long term, and it's part of the reason why we're starting to hear the discussion from modern monetary theory. We can continue to have these types of deficits. We can fund it ourselves by printing more money. And, you know, having grown up with a different set of economic books, I kind of struggle with the fact that we can just print our way out of it without having other implications or other issues. It's kind of like squeezing a balloon. You squeeze it at one end, it's going to pop out somewhere else, and you're not always sure where that's going to be. And that's my fear of just printing money to fund that deficit.
My mother had a good saying. She would say, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You're going to remember that. You know, the government is us, and that revenue comes from somewhere, and it comes from us. So in order to fund that, it's going to ultimately come from the taxpayers.
We're on this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, investors posted modest gains on Thursday. The Dow Jones picking up 45 points to close at 27,182, its seventh advance in a row. The S&P 500 rose 8.5 points. The NASDAQ Composite picked up 25 to close at 81,94. While many retailers are shutting down locations, Old Navy is charting a new course, planning to open 800 new stores in the coming years. Old Navy also is being split from the Gap. It will be its own publicly traded company. Whole Foods will be withdrawing medical benefits for hundreds of its part-time workers beginning on January 1st, 2020. In the past, employees needed to work at least 20 hours a week to qualify for the health care plan. Now they'll have to work at least 30 hours at Whole Foods before they're eligible. Ford is selling its subscription car service called Canvas to another car company called Fair. There's no word on the sales price. Ford hasn't disclosed future plans for any subscription car services. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, I'm looking at the calendar today. Retail sales and consumer sentiment expected out today. Retail sales, always a big thing to watch, right?
For the it economy? Is, yeah. And more than the sentiment, because it tells us what the consumers are actually doing with their pocketbook as opposed to how they're feeling. Really, through much of this, the consumers felt pretty good. We've seen retail sales do reasonably well on a year-over-year basis. We're running at about a 4% annual. As we've talked about, too, a lot of it has obviously moved online as opposed to a brick-and-mortar, part of the reason why we've seen so many different bankruptcies in the brick-and-mortar space. But overall, retail sales are still relatively strong. We want to keep that going, and we want to see that continue because that tells us a lot about the consumer. And really what we're looking at is a consumer that is kind of taking the charge here and keeping the economy moving along in the face of tariffs, maybe some higher prices, political uncertainty, et cetera. The consumer seems to feel pretty good about how things are going.
Is it too soon to see a response from back-to-school sales in these numbers, or will that come in another month?
That should come in another month. We may see some early signs of it here. You know, back-to-school, certainly, you know, we saw it after the 4th of July. We saw the back-to-school sales, and certainly talking to anybody that, any teacher, they don't want to see that that soon. Because it reminds them that summer is toward the end. But we'll see those numbers more in October.
The consumer sentiment number is, as you mentioned, it's how consumers are feeling. You mentioned something to me this morning that I don't remember you talking about before. It's the Citigroup, oh my God, we're going to die index or something like that. And I don't remember.
The technical term is the economic surprise index. And what it is it really takes a look at each of the data points, and it's a plus one or a minus one. If it's above expectations, it's plus one. If it's below expectations, it's minus one. If it's right on expectations, it's zero. And it adds them all together and creates a little chart on it. And we saw the economic surprise index fall through much of 2018 and early 2019, meaning the economic data points were all coming in below expectations. So as that happens, economists continue to downgrade their expectations, continue to think that things are getting a little bit worse. And we saw the markets kind of follow that through much of 2018. Markets from point to point from a year ago to today are essentially unchanged. But over the last 3-4 weeks or so, the economic data has been coming in better than expected as economists are underestimating now what's happening from the economies, and the economy is providing a little bit better growth, maybe, than what economists are expecting.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Maybe the trend is starting to reverse itself.
It is, and that has implications, I think, for the Fed, as we talked about the first segment, that the Fed it may sit on the sidelines a little bit more, may be more apt to do that if the inflation data that we got yesterday and some of the other economic pieces come in a little bit better than expected. It creates less of a reason for the Fed to cut interest rates to keep the economy going.
All right, Paul, have a great weekend. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can drop me an email. The easiest way to get a hold of me, it's pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can continue the conversation there.
All right, have a good weekend. Stay dry.
We'll do it. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul's a Senior Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It is Friday on The Opening Bell, and our conversation now switches to the business of aviation and travel. Ryan Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com and is with us via Skype from Los Angeles this morning. Brian, I want to start first with 737 MAX. The CEO of Boeing this week said he was going to bet that the 737 would be returned to flight different times by various countries. What do you know about this?
Yes, Steve. It's a fun game to try to figure out when this airplane is going to fly again. But Boeing's CEO said this week that he's reasonably confident that it will fly again in the United States by the end of the year, perhaps much later this year, although it proved sooner than that. So that's the good news. The bad news, as he said, he wasn't sure that it would be approved to fly the rest of the world. And you may remember, Steve, from our earlier conversations, lots of airline CEOs had really hoped that all the regulators everywhere in the world, including Europe and China, two big markets, would decide at the same time to approve the airplane. And so that way, consumers in all countries would be confident that they were flying on a MAX and that it was approved everywhere. So now we're looking at a possible situation, Steve, where United and American and Southwest in the United States are going to be flying the MAX. But if you go to Europe and you're flying on LOT Polish, which also flies the MAX, you won't be able to. And customers are going to go to O'Hare and they're going to say, wait a minute, United, you're telling me this airplane is safe to fly. The FAA says it's safe to fly, but Europe isn't allowing it. And I think that that's going to make people pretty nervous. But that just seems to be the way it's shaping up. European regulators said this week that they want to try out the airplane themselves. They want to see what Boeing's fixes were, and their timeline might not be the same as the FAA's. It's just the way it is.
Well, so what's at play here? Is there some distrust about how the process has been going? Is that at the heart of this?
It's hard to say, Steve. I can tell you that in the past, this is a U.S.-made airplane, and regulators all over the world would say, okay, if the FAA has approved the airplane, the FAA knows the airplane better than any regulator in the world, we are also going to approve it. But you're right, it's possible that there has been some distrust here. You'll remember that the FAA was actually the last regulator in the world to ground the airplane. The regulators in China and in Europe grounded it first. And those regulators are probably saying, you know, can we trust the FAA here? Maybe we have to take a look at the airplane ourselves, if only to give our own consumers in our own countries a boost of confidence.
Yeah, because there had been some indication or some suggestion about the FAA being a little too cozy with Boeing.
Boeing.
Exactly. You know, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal wrote those sorts of stories that said maybe over time the FAA inspectors got a little bit too cozy with Boeing. You're right.
Brian, there's another cool story here. I saw a picture of you sitting in Spirit Airline seats. I know we had talked about these roomier seats. So are they roomier? Are they better? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks ago on the show, Steve. Spirit Airlines is coming out with new airplane seats for new deliveries of Airbus aircraft. And they say, you know what, we understand in the past that we made some mistakes with our seats. They didn't have a full-size tray table. They didn't have a whole lot of padding. They weren't very comfortable. So they've come out and they're introducing new seats. I did sit on them this week. I did take a few pictures. Full disclosure, I did it in a room at a trade show in Los Angeles. So people have told me, look, that's not an airplane. But I can tell you, the seats were reasonably comfortable. There was some good padding. There was a little bit more room for your legs. There was a larger tray table. And this is Spirit coming out and saying, you know, we don't want to be as bad as we used to be. Now, I can tell people that the pitch on the aircraft is not changing. So Spirit Airlines is going to have only 28 inches of pitch. And that's the room between seats. That's about 2 inches less than, say, United and American, and about 3 inches less than Delta. But their spin is that it feels like more legroom. And in the very brief time that I was sitting in the seat, I can tell you that there is some truth to that. You know, there's ways that they can kind of cheat the seat and make it feel a little bit roomier, a little bit more comfortable than it used to be. And I think that they have done a decent job at that. I'm not sure that I'll be signing up to fly the seat for 5 or 6 hours across the country, but for an hour or two, it's fine.
Yeah, I saw the 17 or is it 18 inch seat width, and I was immediately concerned because my waist is a little bit wider than that.
Yeah, you know what? You're referencing something that's actually very interesting, Steve. There are three seats, right? They're all together. And two of the seats are only 17 inches across. That's kind of standard for most airplanes. The middle seat, Steve, is going to be an inch wider. The middle seat is going to be 18 inches, and the seats to the left and right of it are going to be 17 inches. And I think we all can probably guess why, right? Nobody wants to sit in the middle seat. And so Spirit is coming out there and saying, we're actually going to make the middle seat a little bit more comfortable because it's going to be an inch wider. People might be happier to sit there. Spirit's not the only airline to do that. Its number one competitor, Frontier Airlines, also goes with a wider middle seat. It's an interesting concept.
Let's talk about the hometown airline for a bit here. United Airlines removing expiration dates on frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, United Airlines announced last week that its frequent flyer miles will not expire. As near as I can tell, this is a pretty good thing for customers. United flyers may know in the past that after 18 months without flying United or using their miles in some way, the miles expired. People absolutely hated that, right? You'd spent these years building up enough miles to get to Europe or Hawaii or even Des Moines. And then one day you went into your account, you thought you had 35,000 miles, and the airline said, well, you haven't flown us for a year and a half, so the miles have disappeared, and there's very little that you can do to get them back. United understood this. And they said, you know what, these miles are not going to expire. I did speak with somebody at United about this last week, and he said, look, you know, these frequent flyer holders are our customers. We don't want to anger them. When somebody's Mileage Plus miles expires, they get kind of irritated with the airline. They might go fly American. They might go fly Delta. United doesn't want that. So, yes, you know what, they're trying to be a little bit more customer friendly here, and I think that that's all that this is.
Well, what United giveth, they taketh away. The story I saw said that, United's no longer going to publish an award chart showing how many miles are required for certain trips. So you're not going to really know how much your miles are worth.
No, that's absolutely true, Steve. Although I can tell you that this decision that United made was made several months ago. So United had already said, you know what, we're not going to have award charts anymore. Passengers had already kind of gotten used to that news if they were aware of it. And this was several months later. They said, also, you know, your miles will not expire. So at least it's something good.
Yeah, there's another cool story out there. Former Delta Airlines CEO Richard Anderson is now at Amtrak, and he wants to bring a little bit of what he's done with airlines to the national railway. Talk to us a little bit about this.
Yeah, Steve, Richard Anderson was CEO of Delta for many years, and he was a very well thought of CEO, a great manager, a great motivator of people. I think people were actually surprised when he retired a couple of years ago, and I don't think folks were surprised when he went out there and he got a new job with a bigger challenge. So he's the CEO of Amtrak. Amtrak is certainly an interesting situation, right? Because it's a kind of a government subsidized rail company. Richard Anderson wants to bring an airline's nimbleness to the rails, which is harder to do than you would think because there's a lot of stakeholders there. Congressmen and senators have things that they want the railway to do. Consumers have different issues that they want. But he's doing his best just to make Amtrak operate a little bit more like a private company. Folks may have seen on the East Coast, he's introduced new rail cars. So if you're taking the train from, say, Boston to New York, you'll be a little bit more comfortable. The problem with rail in this country, and Richard Anderson underscored this to me in our interview, is that the only place that the railway really makes money is on the East Coast, where the big cities are pretty close together and lots of people are moving, you know, from Washington to New York. It's harder to do even between, say, Chicago and St. Louis, and it's really, really hard to make money on those trains, say, from Chicago to Los Angeles. I think Anderson knows that he has to keep some of these long-distance trains, especially because Congress is demanding it. But he told me, you know, could we see a future where we have fewer long-distance trains? Yes, absolutely, and invest more on the profitable East Coast corridor. It's just kind of the way it is.
Richard Anderson is going to be speaking at the Skift Global Forum September 19th in New York City. Tickets still available for that, aren't they?
They are, absolutely. Love to have people come out next week to the Skift Global Forum in New York. I'm going to be interviewing Air France, KLM, CEO Ben Smith, and also American Airlines CFO Derek Kerr. So looking forward to that.
All right, Brian, thank you. Good conversation as always.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers and Skift as well at Skift, and sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report at skift.com/airline. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN. Still ahead, Orion Samuelson will be here with our weekly talk and look at agriculture and commodities.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up more than 100 points this morning, nearly a third. NASDAQ futures up nearly 26, also a third. S&P futures are up nearly a third as well. Around the globe, markets in Europe generally in the green, and in Asia generally in the green as well. The markets in China off for a holiday today. Also this morning, as we look at some of these numbers, gold and silver are higher. Gold by nearly $4.80 an ounce. Silver up as well as we look at some of the commodities. We hope to bring you Orion Samuelson this morning. We're still trying to get in touch with Orion. Could be a problem with the connection with the weather. So we'll keep working on that and try to bring that to you before we leave this morning. So we apologize in advance if it doesn't materialize this morning. A Chinese state news agency says U.S. soybeans, pork, and some other farm products will be exempt from tariff hikes in a possible goodwill gesture ahead of trade negotiations next month with the U.S. The official China news agency announced the step today, citing unidentified official sources, but gave no details. Soybeans are the biggest U.S. export to China, but purchases stopped after President Trump hiked tariffs on Chinese imports in a fight over trade and in technology. The deadline for an agreement between General Motors and the United Auto Workers Union is Saturday at midnight. Insiders are saying that negotiations are still going on and that it looks like a strike is more likely with each passing hour. Primary sticking points are that GM is looking to reduce hourly wages and health care, and the UAW wants a bigger share of the profits. Once the GM deal is agreed to, the UAW will use that as a template for proposed deals with Ford and other companies as well. In the midst of all of this, UAW leadership is dealing with bad blood as the FBI and IRS investigate nine people charged so far, investigating some bad dealings inside of that organization. WeWork parent company revealing today more on its initial public offering plans, saying it expects to list shares on the NASDAQ. The company disclosed the information in a regulatory filing today. Founded as a co-working space in Manhattan in 2010, WeWork has grown to become among the biggest corporate landlords in some cities. It mostly makes money by renting buildings and dividing them into office spaces to sublet to its members. WeWork, whose IPO is expected this month, will be the latest money-losing enterprise to test its luck on the stock market this year, following Uber and Lyft. The company's revenue has more than doubled annually over the last few years, but its losses have grown just as quickly. Last year, the company lost nearly $1.6 billion while bringing in $1.8 billion in revenue. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, September the 13th. There's a loaded lineup of economic reports on this last day of the business week. Retail sales for August lead things off. Retail analysts see sales growing 0.4%. August import-export prices also out today. The preliminary consumer sentiment index for September is also due. The experts are predicting some recovery after the index slumped in August. Also today, business inventories for July. The forecast is for a 0.2% increase over June. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, September the 13th. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN. We'll be back bright and early on Monday morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.